on Instagram. Do you love local music and supporting local arts? CFMC's annual funding drive is running until December 31st, and your gift is needed to help us provide local musicians with modern top-of-the-line equipment, space, and technical support.
Cego.
Buju Anim.
Dan at A. At Anzeni Shuk with An.
Tante.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Sego, Skanaga. Over the next six episodes, I'm going to introduce you to language speakers and language learners from Six Nations of the Grand River Territory. We will learn about what drives their passion to keep our languages alive, and how they're doing it in different ways. We're going to hear music composed and sung in the language, and who knows, you may even pick up some words. But Words and Culture is more than just six episodes of the Haudenosaunee language family. Throughout the next several months, we're going to have other hosts introduce you to more Indigenous languages, including Inuktitut, Cree, Anishinaabemowin, and the Athabaskan language family. My name is January, January Rogers, and I'll be your host on this journey into the languages of the Haudenosaunee people. I am Mohawk in Tuscarora, and I live and work as a writer, a publisher, and a media producer from my home on Six Nations, or Oswego, as we call it. When I first opened the show, you heard me say Sego. That is a Gonyageha word for hello, but it's not spelled like it sounds. It's spelled S-H-E colon K-O-N. The letter K sounds like a G. The Mohawk language is called Gonyageha, and yep, you guessed it, those G sounds are actually spelled with K's. We have a local radio station on Six Nations called CKRZ-FM 100.3 Voice of the Grand, and they've been playing the same language segments for almost as long as they've been on the air.
We will now begin our lesson with transportation. Gagardenas. Gagardenas. There are four parts to this lesson.
It's a great way to hear and to practice the language when you're in your car, for example. And I remember when I was driving with my sister to Windsor from Six Nations and we had the language program on. We got to learn the Mohawk word for car, which is gazarek. Gazarek. We learned that word together. And the further we drove away from Six Nations, the weaker the radio signal got, and we started joking about how we were losing our language until the signal faded out completely. But we'll hear from language speakers who are dedicating themselves to not losing the language signal at all. My first guest is a very strong Indigenous language advocate, language educator, and cultural leader in Six Nations. Amos Key Jr. is Mohawk, but he is a Cayuga language speaker, and we'll find out why that is in his interview. Amos holds down many roles in our community, including being recently elected to band council. When I first approached Amos about doing this interview, a big smile came over him. I took that smile to mean the passion and joy he felt that our languages were getting some much-needed attention, and that more people will soon learn how important our languages are to our overall well-being as Haudenosaunee people.
Hello, Skana. My name is Amos Key. Dehai ho wan snake gwaskiaso, and that's my traditional name. It translates as in Cayuga that I work with words. So that's the translation of Dehai ho wan. And that was given to me at birth, so I had no control over it. It just so happened my career ended up being an advocate in languages for Six Nations, at Six Nations here at Grand River. I'm a Mohawk, Gayant Kiono, and I'm from the Turtle Clan. So from my mother, I inherited all of that ancestry from them, from my mother's side of the family, from Six Nations. We are a matrilineal system, so all of our inheritance, our ancestry comes from our mother's bloodline. And that's probably because of the concepts that we have in our Genesis story about who we are as Ongwehome, Haudenosaunee people.
Does the Cayuga name come from your mother's side then?
Yes, but my mother's side, it came from her father, They helped organize that name, and he brought it to her, and so it's from her family that it got the name, Te Haihuas.
And you're a Mohawk speaker?
No, I speak Cayuga. Mm. I'll have to tell you the story because my mother and father, my mother is a Mohawk speaker, fluently she was, and my father was Onondaga. But they knew each other's languages, and they also knew Seneca and all those languages that lived around them. So Seneca, Mohawk, Cayuga, and Onondaga. So I find it interesting. I never did sit down with them and ask them, because I was so young, I guess it didn't bother me, why they raised us in a Kiga language when it wasn't either of their languages. But because they were so fluent, quadrilingual plus English, it didn't matter to them, I guess. I don't think there was a conscious effort. The only thing I could maybe understand is the fact that Cayuga became the language of our spirituality here at Grand River. It's even in the numbers in the Longhouse, which is our the center of who we are for our spirituality. It's the actual physical buildings. The Longhouse people, Gunosiskehuno. So that's the only reason I can think that they might have, for some reason, decided, or by providence or serendipitous, you know, said, we better raise them in the Kiga language. So all of my brothers and sisters were raised in the Kiga language. I understand more Onondaga and Seneca than I do Mohawk, but her family were all Mohawk speakers. I can remember them all speaking Mohawk when they got together as a family, her siblings, because there was like eight of them. And that Mohawk family all raised the language of their spouses. So then at Six Nations, the language of spirituality became predominantly Cayuga. And that's the language that I grew up in, so that was really helpful, mm-hmm. Yeah, for me. So yeah.
So your whole family's Longhouse people, and is that you went to Cayuga Longhouse?
Yes, at Six Nations we have several Longhouses. I think there's four or five. There's a new Mohawk Longhouse, which is great, but predominantly there were two Cayuga language. I guess all Longhouses were Cayuga language. As I said, it became the language predominantly in the Longhouse, in their spirituality. So there's the Onondaga Longhouse, even though it's Onondaga. It became a Cayuga-speaking Longhouse as well. There's the Seneca Longhouse, which you think would be Seneca, but it is Cayuga predominantly used in that Longhouse as well. And there's two other Cayuga Longhouses, Upper and then Lower Cayuga, with this Cayuga language anyway there. So I find that really interesting, that history, that rich history of our Longhouses, they became all predominantly Cayuga speaking, mm-hmm. right, with the language and the spirituality and the ceremony and the music. Mm-hmm. So for me, when I look at my own history at Six Nations here, it was because there was a couple of solitudes here, I call it. There was a Christian and Longhouse solitude, and then the political Confederacy chiefs and the elected council. So those were the segments of our society here. So I found through my history, my learning here of Grand River, that the Mohawk-speaking community became Anglicans predominantly, and a lot of them, the language became not used anymore. So it became predominantly English for them. So, of course, because of the spirituality of the Anglican faith, right? And then the Longhouse people, they kept their languages. So that's what happened here. But in the last two decades, I would say, with the introduction of Ungawana Genjokwa with Brian Miracle's immersion program, they have moved to create their own new Longhouse, which will mirror all the traditions anyway of all the Longhouses. And now they're doing it. They're conducting it in their own language, a Mohawk, which is beautiful. And that's what you want for them. You want them to have their own spirituality and so they can look at their own moral compass.
Mm. Amos, congratulations. You were elected to council.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And that was like really recently. Tell me what your role and responsibilities are in council.
Well, with the new elected council, right now we are going through 2 months of onboarding or training, which I find really helpful because I was in council before in the 80s, but we never had that kind of onboarding. But now, because I think there's so many directions we're going in and responsibilities, I'm really I'm grateful that they're actually having this training session for us before we take on more leadership positions. But we're going to be involved with everything from health to infrastructure to political stance externally, internally as well. And then we have committees that look after all of those. So then we'll probably be asked, each one of us, to chair one of those committees on behalf of the council. But I'm really, as you know, I'm a staunch supporter of our indigenous civilization here, and also our languages. So I'm sure I'm going to get those portfolios, and I'm really ready to start, because I'm really concerned that we still haven't funded the physical plant, a school for Gawaneo, the immersion school, even though it's been here for 35 years. It still doesn't have a healthy space for it to offer its kindergarten grade 12 program. We are grateful to Stires, Glenn Stires, for offering us his arena, but it's still not a school. So, I mean, we're grateful for all of his offering to allow us to have the Gawaneo Immersion School there. We're very positive and grateful here at Six Nations, because we've gone to the point of establishing a language commission here that's going to oversee the development of language, long-range and short-term planning. But now we can now look at placing language, have a future, a blueprint of where we want, I guess, the next generation to be. Like, I think for me, and that's been always been my sort of in the back of my, one of the metrics would be to have them, or all of us, our next generation, to become bilingual, you know, of whatever language, English and Mohawk, English, Cayuga, Ondaga, and English, vice versa. Mm-hmm. It's a good tool to have a language commission, because then you have all the people who are interested or offering language to come and sit at the table, and we can draft up a blueprint of where we want this community to go in the next 50 years.
Yeah. Right. Well, you're in a great position of influence to make that happen, I have a feeling that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yes. And my role at the radio station has always been to have language on the radio, so we're slowly moving there. I know we got some interest now from all of these community groups to maybe have a radio program about language or to in their language. And they can even be DJing in their language. You know, you don't have to have language lessons all the time. It can just be sort of the contemporary radio program with language as the mode of transmission. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. It's being done. Yes. We hear that coming out of Ganawage.
Yes.
They have that K100 3-point station or whatever it is. But they've got to noon hour all language programming. Yeah. You kind of answered this question already, but you wanted to hear more about people who are language speakers where they have come through, it's intergenerational within the family.
Right.
And, I'm hearing from new language speakers that there is an old language, old school, if you will, language. And I'm wondering if you could tell me, because as someone who has been brought up in language with your family, what are the differences or similarities between old school language and what you hear the new language speakers speaking?
Sometimes when I hear them, I think it's the cadence of the language. And I'm guilty of it, too. I tend to speak it faster than my parents would have. Mm. They took their time speaking the language, so that was like, you can't misunderstand them, right? But I find also in my thinking, and maybe it's because I'm still translating as well from English to Cayuga, because that's what I'm always asked to do, right? Mm. But I just love hearing the young people now speaking in their circles totally in the language. And I don't know whether that's a criticism. I don't think it is. It's just that the language has switched, and the language has become, the cadence of it has sped up, right? That's the only real significant difference I see or hear, because I'm an advocate for language. I just love it when I hear them all speaking in a room, these young people, and they're bilingual, right? Mm. Even as an adult, because I had no contemporaries to speak my language with. So there's about a 20-year space of these young people now who are bilingual. So that's what happened to us here at Six Nations. So all of our young people who are speaking a language are probably in their 30s. There's a big gap between speakers or bilingual speakers of the language. So it's either you're in your 70s or in your below age 30 or less, right, that are speaking a language. Those who are senior, they get together as well, and they help the younger people learn how to speak their language, or they're asked questions about certain, philosophies, even word origin, etymology, they call it, some of the word phrases, like where did they originate from and stuff. And that's the next thing I want to work with is the etymology, of our words, because a lot of it has a sacred morpheme in it that's related to our genesis or the creator. And I think we need to do some research in that. And that'll really bring the language alive, because then you'll know the origins of some of our more sacred phrases, I guess, of words.
I absolutely love that. You know, having an understanding of the real origins of these words and broken apart and connecting to the words in that way is just amazing. It's really indigenizing the methodology within the teaching of the language. Yeah. And, because anybody can learn and recite, suppose.
Yeah, by rote,
but then that really helps to root the language in one's heart, you will.
Yeah.
What are the benefits say, for example, Mark Miller, MP Miller, white guy, who really is kind of proficient in the Mohawk language because he applied himself. Yeah. And what are the benefits of non-native people picking up the language, do you think?
Well, you could stand back and say they should have done it in the first place, right? And I think it'll give them an idea of who we are as indigenous people, because there's all this incidental learning that goes on. So you learn the grammar of the language, normally in a language program, but I see a lot of our teachers, because they have this other knowledge base, that they come to the classroom and they can share the ideology, the psychology, the philosophy of what our civilizations are about, and their virtues and ethics. So they can share all of that in an adult classroom or an immersion system, so they'll understand basically all that incidental learning that comes in a language program. And I think that's true for all language programs. It's just that now we're taking the stage, we're going to present now from our point of view and from our perspective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a little embarrassing for me as a non-speaker when a non-native person can just kind of kind of riff off in the language. I'm like, I have nothing but excuses. I mean, even as a person who has like minimal language, when I do recognize words in conversation, when I hear the language spoken in conversation, and I'm able to pick out those words I know, it just makes you sit up.
Yes.
And also, Amos, you are now the executive director at CKRZ, where we're recording our interview.
Yes.
I wanted to, if you could tell us about the role that you see radio playing in terms of perpetuating language, in particular CKRZ. What does CKRZ do?
Throughout the day, we have language lessons, at least word lists from all different languages, Ojibwe, Anishinaabe, Mi'kmaq, Cayuga, Onondaga, and Mohawk. So we have that playing throughout the day, but now we're having actual students come in and now producing their own language program. So we started with Cayuga, we're hoping the Mohawk and then the Onondaga will come on, and then the Anishinaabe will come on and do their own show. But I think there's a connectedness between all of the Haudenosaunee communities, because as you mentioned, Kahnawake, Agwesasne has a fantastic radio program in the language. And now Tainanega just got licensed. I got the license this week. They were certified to have a radio station there now. So they're going to start all over with their Mohawk language. And then now Manitoulin Island is also going to start with their radio station. So it'll be all in Anishinaabe, Mi'kmaq, Ojibwe. So that's going to be fantastic. So I guess our next step would be to have an association of indigenous radio so that we can talk shop and give our best practices, share our best practices with each other, and raise the profile of our radio stations. Because we're a not-for-profit radio station here, I call it NGO, not non-government organization, we have that kind of connection to the community that they can come and use the radio station for their efforts, right? So I want to make sure that that continues to go on, and as a radio station here at CKRZ, that opportunity for our languages to flourish live on air, because we always keep saying it's a live language. Yeah. It's something that we should be speaking as an oral language, I guess is what they say. Mm-hmm. So if it's, I think we have the vehicle for being an oral language right here at CKRZ. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
That's something that can get syndicated out into other communities. And, you know, it really kind of debunks the idea that any of the urban radio stations who have, like, you know, proper, you know, commercial radio licenses, who say, oh, the big excuse for them not to include language, although they're actually supposed to have language, is the funding. Right. They can't find the funding to produce those language programs.
Right.
Whereas, you know, like you said, this is the people's radio station. Yeah, it's the voice of the Grand.
That's right.
So it's really literally bringing that home and making that available.
Yeah.
So that those programs then become like really invaluable to the radio community at large.
Right.
And I hope we see that.
Yeah, and we didn't, as adults, we didn't have that vehicle to help us with our language, but now this next generation, they have that vehicle for them to promote their language and to hear themselves speak, you know, because we rebroadcast a lot of the shows so that they can hear it over and over and over. And I think it's a great opportunity, I think, for all of our radio stations in the Southwest, or Southern Ontario, I should say, to really promote and help promote the language and to make it alive again, oral tradition, as we used to say. But we have a lot of that, and we want to be able to do that with our young people now that going forward. Mind you, we didn't have that available to us because, you know, our languages were, as a human right, were stripped. We were stripped of that with the Indian Act. I mean, right until the 80s when we started Gawaneo, the parents had to become civilly disobedient in order to have a school where the language was the mode of instruction. So I know that history, and I would advise any other community that if they want to demonstrate their need for the language, then become civilly disobedient. There's a place for being civilly disobedient, and we proved it here. The parents just said, we're not sending our children back to school until we get immersion, and that's what happened here at Grand River.
One last thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
You know, Amos, you're so active and busy in community, and you also sing with the singing society, Old Mush Singers. And I just wanted to hear from you the role you see the singing societies play in perpetuating the language.
Well, for our Old Mush Singers, I try to make sure that I compose songs in our languages so that these young people and these, you know, senior people who are in our group may not have had the opportunity to sing in their language. So, I try to create music in our languages so that they can learn them, right? And I guess because when you take a deeper dive into our civilization, it is full of music for every occasion, from birth, when you get your name, your language, I mean, your name is raised with music to the creator at that time in ceremony, right to when we take our last breaths. There's music for wakes. There's music for our deaths. So we have all those occasions. Then when we celebrate, we can, you know, and all of our ceremony throughout the year, all is full of music. And that's, you know, it's just like any civilization in the world has music for every occasion, just like Western European languages all have music in their language. We do too. So that's why I'm so grateful. And when I'm at the university and acting as a professor, I try to debunk the term culture because it's so limiting. Mm. So I just say we have a civilization, you know, and one of the traits of that is that we have music, just like any other civilization in the world. And we don't just have stories about our origin. We have a genesis. We have a genesis, and we've got to start believing in that. And that's because when anthropologists talked about us, they used to say it's their legend or their story. And it's so demeaning to me. It's not that. It is a genesis of who we are, because as Ongwihome people, we are from the sky world. And we consider ourselves star people because we came from the heavens, right? You know, so then you can say you're divine because then you know you came from a creator or maker who is Sungwayadison to us. So we have the divinity built in our civilization right away. We're probably closer to science with the Big Bang Theory. We call it Genesis. Scientists call it the Big Bang Theory. We all come from the sky world, you know? I just think that's so beautiful, and I think that's just now getting out there, you know? And I'm glad some of our younger artists are beginning to promote that as well, whether it's in their visual arts or their music, mm-hmm. that we are from the sky world and that we have a tradition, we have a genesis. It's not just a story.
How do you say star people in the language?
Oh, I would say Onguehoe. I would just say Onguehoe. Because we're the real people, right? Sure. The real people, yeah.
That was Amos Key Jr., Six Nations' own Renaissance man. I really loved how Amos talked about how music, as well as language, is such an integral part of what we do, how we live, who we are as Haudenosaunee people. Music is prayer. Music is medicine. That's why we have seen and continue to see great musical excellence come from Six Nations. As long as we keep singing, we will continue to thrive as ourselves. I'm January Rogers, your host. Coming up on future episodes of Words and Culture, I'm going to be speaking with language learners who created a radio show right here on Six Nations of the Grand River to share and teach their language. It's like a little language nest on the radio for all to benefit from. But now I have a song for you. All Mush singers are part of a national singing society who are benevolent in nature. Their first job is to help people in community who need help. That used to be things like cutting wood for older people or delivering foods to those who are housebound. They are a well-structured and disciplined society with rules, traditions, leadership, and responsibilities. Singing is actually their third job. They appear at social dance gatherings and sing at different events in community and even at festivals. With these appearances, the old Mush singers are able to share not only our traditional songs, but the real meaning behind the songs. I had the privilege of attending one of their practices as they were getting ready for a big sing hosted on Six Nations in the spring of 2023. Well, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to leave you with three quick words in Ganyageha. Honyo, meaning hurry up. Honyo, come on. Whisk, that means five. That's my cat's name because I found him on Fifth Line here on Six Nations. And Oguare, meaning bear. My cat Whisk is a little oguare, a little bear. Nyawa, that means thank you. So nyawa for joining me on Words and Culture. Until next time, be well, take care.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko seni denip e. Minen yuji shina.
Ekose.
Kakuudau. We'll see you again.
Hello, this is Christina Laurie, CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative news reporter. Does local news matter to you? CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st, and you can help CFRC keep our listeners informed on issues that matter with modernized broadcasting equipment and trained team members. Help CFRC raise $25,000 this year and make your gift today via CFRC.ca. Don't forget to tune in for daily news programming and subscribe to our news podcast to keep up with the latest in your community.
And good morning. It is 7:30 a.m. here in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned into CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca for those of you listening in through the web. We are located in the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queen's campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to What's Brewing. So this week is very exciting for me because I actually got to see one of the artists that I'm going to be playing today live a couple days ago at the Grad Club. So we'll get into that more later, but we're going to start things off with Louis Charles et Couteau. This was released as a single on November 3rd. They're a Quebec City-based alt and post-punk group, self-proclaimed musique de nuit or night music. This is their second single in anticipation of an upcoming project, Louis Charles 2. After that, we have Shapes with In Its Way, releases a single on October 24th. This is a Montreal-based post-punk group with shared influences in 80s new wave and goth. And then finally, we have Slash Need with Cool Touch off of their debut album, Sit and Grin, released October 21st. This is a Toronto-based darkwave electronica and synth punk group. This is the group that I saw live at the Grad Club. They were absolutely amazing, absolutely incredible artistry. It was definitely an experience, and they definitely incorporate a lot of aesthetic elements into their performance. They have performers that are going through the crowd and just engaging with the crowd. An absolutely incredible show. I think one of the best that I've seen in a long time. They're actually playing November 15th in Toronto as well. So if you are feeling like you missed out and you're in Toronto for the weekend, I strongly recommend going to see them live, or if they come back to Kingston anytime soon. But without further ado, we're going to kick things off with Louis Charles and Couteau right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is What's Brewing.
C'est beau quand tout va trop vite. Assis dans le char en fil. Je voulais partir à Bancante. C'est beau quand tout va trop vite. Je dormirai dehors. Je dormirai dehors. Je dormirai dehors. Je voulais te dire. Je voulais te dire. Je voulais te dire.
te voir. J'ai manqué de joie dans mon corps. C'est la saison pour jouer dehors. Sortir de l'ascenseur, couper le corps.
Buried. I waken sometimes screaming with nightmares in which I see myself buried alive, waking to find myself in tomb, without air, stifling in no escape.
And welcome back. You just finished listening to Cool Touch by Slash Need. Before that, we had Shapes with In Its Way. And at the very top of that set, we had Couteau by Louis Char right here on What's Brewing, CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up next, we have some more French and Montreal-based groups. We're going to start things off with Adieu Narcisse and Jamais. This was released as a single on October 14th. This is a Quebec-based multidisciplinary artist collective. They lean alternative pop, and they utilize poetry and stage performance art to distinguish and elevate themselves. This track specifically comes after a struggle with addiction and dysphoria, recognizing the self-destruction and pain that's caused by that, and it serves as a public apology and a reminder that the only power we have is to change ourselves for the better. After that, we have Tom Légère with Toujours Mieux, released as a single on October 27th. This is a Montreal-based rock, lo-fi, electroacoustic artist. And this is the first track from his upcoming solo project. He's also known as the drummer and singer of the Montreal duo Valse Fréquence. And then after that, we have Bloc Perron with The Long Night, released as a single on October 31st. They're a Winnipeg, Manitoba-based alt-rock post-punk group. And this started as a one-off tribute to the L.A. band X and kind of emerged from there. So without further ado, we're going to kick it off with Adieu Narcisse and Jamais right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is What's Brewing.
sais le faire, toujours mieux, toujours mieux. Moi je sais le faire, toujours mieux, toujours mieux. Moi je sais le faire, toujours mieux, toujours mieux.
To Bloch Perrin with The Long Night. Before that, we had Toujours Mieux by Tom Leger. And at the very top of that set, Adieu Narcisse with Jamais, right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This is What's Brewing. We're getting into our last few tracks. So without further ado, kicking things off with Sunday Club and Nuclear Fallout. This is off of their EP, Bannatyne, released October 31st. They lean more shoegaze, and they're from rural Manitoba, based in Winnipeg. Winnipeg. This is in anticipation of their debut album with Paper Bag Records, so keep an eye out for that. And then after that, we're going to finish things off with Carrie Matisse and The End of the World, released as a single November 5th. This is a Toronto-based alternative dream pop artist. She's also a poet and singer-songwriter with an undergrad degree in opera and a master's in creative writing. This specifically is a song about wondering how the world could go on without your best friend in it, and the hope that she has for the people who define our lives waiting for us when it's all over. She also has a mini movie coming out in anticipation of her upcoming debut concept EP. This is her second single, so definitely go check out the rest of her music and some of the visuals she has to accompany them. But without further ado, Sunday Club and Nuclear Fallout. I'll see you guys next week. CFRC 101.9 FM. This is What's Brewing.
Just like a ride for me. This November, the Alma Mater Society at Queen's University will hold its annual fall referenda for AMS student fee collecting groups on November 12th, 13th, and 14th. The referendum will be held online via Simply Voting. Eligible students will receive an email from the AMS at 12:01 a.m. on November 12th with instructions and links to cast their ballots online. Learn more about AMS.